You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Hawk, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario. Hamilton's alternative.
Good evening, everybody. Hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday, and thanks so much for hopping on here and listening to me once again. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm talking to Andy Colonico. He's the Welland based vocalist behind classic rock group Revive the Rose and owner of Snare Guy Records. You can find Andy on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Andy Colonico, and Revive the Rose on all streaming services and socials as themselves. So, hey, Andy, thanks so much for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here over the phone.
Yeah, of course, anytime. So, I guess, like, just to kind of start everything off, give a little introduction about yourself. How would you describe your style and sound?
Definitely very raw, balls to the wall, hard rock, I would say.
Okay.
But, you know, it gets diverse once in a while. It's very open. I don't know. It's just a good vibe, a good party rock, I guess. I don't know what to really call us, but we're just a good vibe, I would say.
Sure, yeah. Who are your biggest musical influences, and do you share those with the members of your band?
Yeah, we definitely share a lot of common, influences. We each, favor a few different ones, but definitely some common ones. The Foo Fighters, we love the Foos. We love April Wine. That's another good band that we look up to. We love the Trues, and yeah, Lynyrd Skynyrd, that's easily the top four, I'd say, of the boys, what we really dig.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid, and do you think that has an impact on your current style, and do you still listen to any of those early influences?
Yeah, totally. Me, personally, I come from a completely left-field background of music. I grew up with, Broadway music, the musical soundtracks, because my mother was an actor, or she is an actor, and she does Broadway and does a lot of theater work. She's a singer.
Cool.
So I get a lot of that from her side and a lot of jazz from her side. A lot of 1950s, like the Andrews Sisters and whatnot. But anyway, I got a lot of influence on that end, and my father, he loved a lot of R&B, like funk groups like Earth, Wind and Fire, Tower of Power, Blood, Sweat and Tears, so I kind of grew up in that realm of a lot of oldies like that. And obviously he liked the Eagles and the Doobie Brothers. That was another common rock interest both my parents shared growing up. When it came, because I'm the original drummer of the band, of Revive, so when it comes to my drumming style to formate the chemistry of the band, I'm jazz and Latin trained, so I do a lot of my drum fills and whatnot. The way I structure my drum lines definitely has an impact as to how we write songs, because like I said, I come from that background, so when I finally caved into the punk rock and rock and roll, it kind of just became this cool hybrid. So that definitely does have an impact from my growing ups. My brother, he was in the acting for a bit. And the reason why I got into punk rock was because of him. He was in the Billy Talent music video for Devil in a Midnight Mass. He was cast as the lead role. So he came home with a signed CD of their first album, and that changed my life, that CD.
Cool. Do you remember when you first kind of discovered music, when it first made an impact and you saw that and you were like, wow, I want to do that?
Yes. I remember when... So my mom, when I was a kid, she brought home, because me and my brother loved, you know, listening to goofy stuff, but she brought home an Alvin and the Chipmunks CD of them doing the Beatles. And I'm like, well, these songs are fantastic. And then all of a sudden, I'm a 6-year-old in like grade one, and my aunt gifts me the Red album by the Beatles, like the actual Beatles. So when I laid my hands on like the real deal, you know, I was like, wow, like I was so mind blown by the song structures and just the harmonies and everything like that. I was really mind blown. I'm like, I found myself singing a lot after I discovered the Beatles. So that's what kind of got me into diving more into that route, which eventually led to, you know, a lot of more harder rock and roll and whatnot. But yeah, the Beatles were my first and still one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, totally. Did you start drumming first or did you start singing first?
So, I mean, I'm not really trained vocally. Like, I just started singing randomly, like in the car and whatnot. But drumming, actually, I started on piano, believe it or not. That was my first instrument I ever learned. My parents threw me and my brother into piano lessons, and I did that for about 6 years of my life. And then I witnessed some guy playing drums, like that was in that took the same lessons from where I took piano lessons, and I thought it was really cool. It was like electric drums. And my dad and my mom, they bought us this little Yamaha drum kit, like the, you know, like the little kid drum kits, like they're like you know, small. Me and my dad, we would jam 2-piece, like my dad plays saxophone, so sometimes I'd be downstairs just fooling around the drum kit and he'd be playing sax, so we would just start going to town down there. And then finally I expressed I no longer wanted to you know, train in piano, and then they bought me a drum kit for my 9th birthday, and I started in lessons.
Yeah, cool. When did you start creating music, and do you remember the first song that you wrote?
Yeah, me and my brother, we would jam all the time, because my brother plays guitar, too, on top of it all. So me and him would just fool around, and we had this, like, made-up group. And we went by Doobie and Papa was our group name.
Nice.
Cause my nickname for some reason growing up was Doobie, because my parents loved the Doobie Brothers, so that was my nickname. And then and just because my brother was my older brother, I just called him Papa, like he was older, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
We just called ourselves Doobie and Papa. we just made this like really bad CD, like, well, not bad, like it was just made on a cassette, like, you know those old cassette players that had the microphone built in? We literally, like, we recorded on that, and we made like a, I don't know, like a 5-track album, which I still have, and it's hung up in my room. And yeah, I remember we recorded like a whole album, just me and my brother, and it sounds terrible, but I mean, it's a start, right? So
oh yeah, it's something.
That was about 2002 or 2003, I want to say, we did that.
Wow, long time ago.
Yeah, and it was my first CD I ever burnt. My mom used to teach me how to burn CDs when I was really young, so I'd just make a bunch of mix CDs and whatnot. But then finally, we had this thing that would convert our cassettes to the computer, and then we would splice up the tracks digitally, and then we would burn them on CDs. So not bad for a 7-year-old at the time, but yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
That's a great question. I honestly, like, it's just been so consistent in my life, and like, I always never want to do anything but play music all the time. It's never something that's like left my mind. It surrounds me all the time, and I think I always knew I wanted to do it deep down. But it was probably about when I started singing more, which was like, I remember when I first sang in front of people, it was, I was in grade 11, because I had to perform in front of like this like assembly, because my friend Lisa was like, you sound good, because I was always doing backup vocals for my high school bands and whatnot while I was on drums. But my friend Lisa noticed, like, I really like to sing, and I would, you know, I did a decent job, and she's like, yeah, like, why don't you take a lead role for once? And I've, so finally for this, like, multicultural assembly at, like, grade 11, I did it, and I think it went over really well. People were, like, gave me good feedback and gave me the confidence to keep going. So probably around then, when I thought, because I was really nervous to sing in front of people. I don't know why I thought people would make fun of me. So when I got over that fear, I just started, like, so many pictures were being painted, like, in my head. Like, you know, like, I want to sing to, like, people more. Like, I sang in front of 1,500 kids just now, in front of, like, my whole high school, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So kind of gave me that kick that I needed, I think, to really realize, all right, I want to do this. And, yeah, and then I was lucky enough to start Revive the Rose eventually a year after high school. And it was probably the most serious band I was in. We all just connected, and we all just said, we want to do this. And, like, we just kept at it, and we're still going.
Awesome. Did you study or take professional lessons?
Drumming, yes. I and piano, obviously. But yeah, when it came to drums, I took professional lessons. My mom, my first teacher was, his name was Mark Ineo, and he actually toured with my mom when they were doing theater gigs. So that was my first in with a really awesome drum teacher. That guy is nuts. And he's done a bunch of stuff, like, after that, like, a lot of televised stuff and whatnot. But when he got a little too busy, I moved to a new teacher, and his name's Jim Caston, and he's awesome. He taught me a lot about blues and rock and roll more, and that's kind of when I started going a little more meat and potatoes on the drums. There's a very good Niagara band called LMT Connection, and their drummer, Mark Rogers, was my final teacher, and that guy is an animal. And, like, my last lesson ever, I'd say, I took bass lessons for 1 year with the Ontario Conservatory. My teacher, his name was Carmen Celli, and he taught me just kind of how to work the fretboard, because, you know, drummer to bass guitar, you know, I'm so used to being a caveman, so he just kind of translated the fretboard for me, and I just kind of took it from there by ear after that.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think was the most important lesson you took away from being taught how to play certain instruments?
Definitely what I should have done more, for drums at least, I should have kept more of a consistent practice. I always veered away from doing the simple things that like make a bigger difference in the long run. Like, you know, drummers should be practicing their rudiments, which is like, you know, practicing the types of drum rolls you do and whatnot to like a slower tempo. Like, you got to train your hands to like really be flexible. And I my left hand, it's always something that like, it could have been better, but like I've gotten away with it, I guess. But like, yeah, definitely consistent practicing your craft. You can always get better, right? So you're never good enough. You know, you always got to be hungry to be the best mm-hmm. you can be for yourself. Right. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
Well, my friends are all about it. I'm really lucky. I got good friends, like really supportive backbone, and they always come and party, and it's awesome. It's kind of been like a huge foundation for Revive the Rose. Like, we kind of started the band after college, like when nobody really knew what was going on with their life, and that was a good time to start it. But I've been very blessed to have friends through the boys on, and you know, always wish for success. And my family, you know, they always want me to do what I want, but they just, you know, I remember for a while there was an argument, like, you know, where I didn't want to do college, but like they really only pushed me to do college just so I had a plan B. You know, you always gotta play safe, right? You gotta think outside the box. But it ended up being great. I went to marketing school, and it actually really helped me fine-tune my business being the band. Like, it really helped me realized that there's things I could be doing better to grow this thing, and I met a lot of cool teachers that you know, taught me a lot, and they've always been gung-ho about me doing music, and I think it's something they've always wanted to do as well, so you know, it's just kind of a common interest, and they're all about it, and yeah, I'm very lucky. I got great family and great friends.
Awesome. What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
Well, definitely lyrically.
Sure.
Gonna throw that right off the table. I've been through a lot personally, like over the last 7 years of being in this band. you know, we were young. Like, we started this band like 17 years old. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, just moving out from home for the first time, you know, multiple breakups, like, you know, you name it, every issue, growing up, you know, just gaining new perspectives from trying out life a bit, you know. Lyrically, I definitely was able to fine-tune my lyrics better and, you know, play more maturely. And same with Pete, too. Pete helps a lot on the lyric side of things sometimes. And, yeah, we've just kind of grown together as friends and just experienced a lot. So lyrically has definitely changed. And I think what's kind of, like, never really changed is this our diversity as a band. We're not afraid to pigeon. Like, we never try to pigeonhole ourselves. We always try to, like, stand out and just do what we feels good, you know? And it just, I feel like it always, that rawness has always been there. But definitely, I don't know, just, you know, it fine-tunes over time, you know, just structure. And we got to work with a lot of cool people, like, you know, John Angus from The Trues, which you were there for those sessions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked with Leon from The Lazies, and just a bunch of cool people we've met over time to give us feedback, like, that are professionals. So we've definitely learned how to trim a lot of fat off some songwriting and, you know, make more of a bop, I guess, you know?
Yeah, totally, yeah. Did you grow up in Welland?
I personally grew up in Welland, and Pete did as well. I'm actually, funny, me and Matt are only a day apart birthwise, and we were born in the same hospital.
Weird.
So we were, like, down the hall from each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why stick around in Welland? Why not kind of branch out and move somewhere else?
There's one thing I realize is that Niagara is a beautiful town, like a beautiful region to live in. Very, mm-hmm. We're very lucky here in Niagara. And it's very close to everything. It's close to America. It's close to Toronto. I've got no reason to move out, really. Like, if I gotta go to Toronto and do my thing, I will. I love it. It's true. And I kind of like keeping, you know, the bigger city the thrill more. Like, I don't want to live in the big city, I feel like. I like kind of, you know, making it a little vacay business trip, you know, sometimes. Or, like, going to a show, it's like a whole day, like a little road trip, you know. So I kind of like the thrill of it. And I like coming back to my good small town, you know, and keeping grounded over here. And we're very lucky with all the space we have down here to jam. And, you know, we can have a lot of bonfires down here. I like the whole small town feel, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is special about Welland or Niagara's music scene?
Well, I'll tell you, Welland doesn't have much of a music scene, but there's a lot of talented people in Welland, and a lot of them are starting to sprout again. What's cool about our band name in Welland is that Welland used to have one of the biggest Ontario punk rock scenes in the early days, and it was called Bro City Hardcore. So that's what our name is about, because we wanted to bring back, you know, we wanted to put Welland back on the map, so we're called Revive the Rose, right? Mm-hmm. Rose City.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely Niagara's got a great potential music scene. Like, it's had a lot of phases. Like, I remember the scene phase with all the pop punk bands and whatnot, and Scene Fest itself, like, you know. St. Catharines has gone through a lot of changes over the years, but it's cool to see the entire Niagara region kind of grow over time. Like, even Niagara Falls, there's a lot of great musicians out of there. Welland, a lot of, like, Attack and Black, I don't know if you know that band, they're from Welland.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Romano, he's done some remarkable things. Like, he played with City of Color for a bit during their Little Hell time. Like, he was on that album and everything. Crazy. Like, I don't know, it's just cool.
Yeah.
It's growing, though, definitely, and it's definitely nice to see people pushing the arts again. I feel there was kind of an awkward phase there for a bit, but it's really, I don't know, with the help of social media, a lot of stuff's been able to grow even bigger now, so it's cool. One thing at a time, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Definitely, I'm not just saying this because I'm his manager. But mm-hmm. there's a man from Port Colborne, Ontario, and he goes by Gravely James.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just completely mesmerized when I saw this guy for the first time. He's like, kind of like when you watch John Mayer solo on a guitar, and you're like, how does he do all that, and how does he sound that good at the same time, like vocally?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, like, you're just so mind-blown when you're watching this guy. He's a great songwriter, you know, and he writes about just genuine stuff. It's definitely more spotlight needs to be shown on Gravely James. And another very good band from Niagara that's recently formed is The Minimum Wage, another cool band. And they actually own their own PR company called From the Straight. But they're great, though. They just dropped two singles recently, and I'm all about it. Really, really cool. And they actually featured the drummer of Attack in Black on their newest one, so that was cool.
Cool, look it up.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's definitely right up your alley, for sure.
Cool. Who would you say is, like, a dream collaborator of yours, and, like, totally go big on this one?
I would love to collaborate with Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters. I could pick one that, like, I would love to happen. I think it'd go really well, and I just, that band, like, the Foo Fighters mean so much to me. Like, I just, it's beyond words just how great that band is.
Yeah, oh yeah. Who's a local artist that you'd love to collaborate with?
I would love to eventually one day collaborate either with Ryan Guay from Street Pharmacy. Street Pharmacy had a cool history as well, and they're from Welland. They won the Disband Much Music show one year. I think it was 2009, I believe. And they had some cool opportunities, but they've been a big inspiration to me growing up, and I think that's just a long overdue collab. Like, he produced our first album for us, like Bar Down and all those songs. I think it'd be really cool to collaborate one day with him.
Oh yeah, totally. So your most recent single, Heartless Place, was released just last month. Can you tell me a bit about the meaning behind that song?
Yeah, totally. Actually, that one's really cool because I was able to reflect the music video to, like, when I wrote the song. Like, because the song, I wrote it originally, me and a couple buddies did, like, this acoustic tour around, you know, just a couple shows in Ontario. And I told these venues we would play song covers because, like, you know, they pay, cover gigs pay really well. So all we did was just get the three of us and just divide the cost at the time, and then we would just kind of throw our originals in with some covers so we can, like, disguise it. But my one buddy, very talented, but just very left field kind of genre compared to, like, what I think a bar crowd expects, and they literally, like, heckled him off, and it was really depressing to see because he's so good. And I just remember saying, like, what a heartless place this is, like, this really sucks. And I remember I went to go to the bathroom, and I remember that melody for the chorus came into my head, and I was like, oh, I gotta, like, record this. So I jotted down, I just, like, whispered in my iPhone on, like, the voice app, I sang the chorus of the song, and then that was it. And I brought it home one day, and I was trying to figure out the riff, like, for the verses, and I tried to learn a song by this country band called Midland. And they have a song called Mr. Lonely. I tried to learn it because it's a sassy, fun, rowdy song, and I'm like, oh, this will be fun. But then I ended up writing, like, the riff, like the da-na-ba-da-da-da-da-da. So I just started rolling with that, and then it happened to be in the same key as the melody I was singing. I'm like, oh, this works for this song, and then that's how Heartless Place came to be.
yeah, oh, cool.
So I wrote it about my buddy getting heckled, and yeah. Then the music video is literally a guy getting heckled off stage for an open mic.
Yeah.
So, and then we play.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys typically write each song as a team, or does that kind of change depending on the track?
Yeah, it's really spontaneous. Sometimes I bring a whole tune to the table, and we learn it and kind of evolve it that way, or Pete will bring the tune, and, you know, we do the same thing with that. Or sometimes we're just drinking and, like, we'll just spontaneously write a tune together, like, all three of us, or, you know, sometimes, you know, my bass player will bring a cool riff, and then we just kind of all hop on. It's very collaborative in that sense, but, yeah, you know, we're all about each other's songwriting. Like, if someone wants to bring a song to the table, we'll totally pursue it if it's, you know, worth our time or whatever, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone's gotta write.
Exactly. Who did you work with to record and produce Heartless Place?
So that one, we teamed up with John Angus McDonald from the band The Trues, which was a connection through our manager, who thought we'd work really well together. And I was low-key freaking out because I love The Trues. They're like, if it's not the Foo Fighters, The Trues are also my favorite band.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, like, if you think so, like, sure.
Yeah.
And then we hit it off really well. We went for beers with John Angus, and that guy was just such a slayer. And we just felt like we had a very good common ground of chemistry. And we went over to his house for a writing sesh, and he really liked that tune out of the demos we sent him, and completely helped us make that a single. So it was really cool experience.
Yeah. What do you hope your listeners take away from the song?
Whatever they want to take away from it, but I just hope they're having a good time while they're cranking it, really. That's all I care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I hope they can relate to it on their own form. There's a lot of heartless things out there, so, I hope it helps them feel better about those situations for them, I guess.
For sure, yeah. So, you know, about the music video for Heartless Place, who did you work with, and how long did the filming process take?
So, we always tend to work with our good pal Brandon Primer, and he has his company called Primer Productions. We've been working with him for years, and he's just done such a great job all the time, and he's so talented. He's got a good eye, he's got good ideas, and we just kind of throw him raw ideas all the time, and he makes them all amazing. We actually filmed 3 music videos in 2 days this year. So, we did the Need You Now video, and then we did the Heartless Place video, and then we have another single coming out, and we did all 3 of those videos in, 2 days.
Wow.
So, just because COVID was such a weird time, we didn't know what to do, and, we said, let's just get it done now before any... I think, a lockdown was lifted when we did them, and so we just said, screw it, let's just get this done now, just in case we get screwed again, and, I mean, yeah, we did. We got screwed again with the third one, so good thing we did that.
Yeah, good thing. You're prepared. Yeah. So we're just going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a 2021 Revive the Rose single. We just talked about it earlier. Heartless Place is a track about feeling disenchanted with the world.
Yeah.
joining us. This is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Andy Colonico, the lead singer of Welland classic rock band Revive the Rose and owner of Snare Guy Records. So speaking of Snare Guy, you started a label, which is like quite a large project to take on. How did that conversation start?
Well, I've always, like, just liked the idea of, like, a community with the label. Like, you know, I saw a lot of cool labels like Dynalone Records. What a cool vibe, you know? Like, I don't know. It's really cool to see people just helping each other out in that sense and just building community, you know? And I really like that. And I always been super passionate, you know, for other artists, like, you know? And I'm always a guy that just loves to lend a hand whenever I can, you know, and I, you know, it's been ground up for me, honestly. I've had people, you know, help me get on certain shows and whatnot, but when it comes to, like, the meat and potatoes and, like, the brains behind the industry, I've had to do a lot of it on my own. It's not in marketing, like, everything, like, game planning. Like, I went to business school, which opened up a lot of avenues, so, like, I just finally felt it was time where I could just at least plant the seed of starting a label management company. So there's two sides to Snare Guy. There's Snare Guy Records and there's Snare Guy Management. And I'm more so focused actually on Snare Guy Management right now, but it's all, you know, umbrellaed under Snare Guy Records.
Yeah.
I do plan to build a bigger catalog when the time is ready. But yeah, I just love helping artists, and there's a lot of artists out there that just that I believe in that don't always know, you know, kind of what to do as the next step, right? And I'm just constantly grinding all the time, and it's kind of fun for me. It's just really fun, especially, like, you know, I manage a rapper, and I never even listened to rap a whole lot until I started managing Conan Doyle, his name is, and it's been cool to, like, study the rap game, like the hip hop, how, like, it's almost like it's similar, but it's very different in the way you grow in that. And it's fun for me to learn. I don't know, and I love helping them out. I really believe in, you know, Conan Doyle. I believe in Gravely James. I believe in the Jailbirds. Those are the artists I'm thinking about right now. And I just want to help them out. And you know, whatever. Revive the Rose is essentially just like a giant crash test dummy. I just throw out the industry, and whatever works, then I sponge it in, Snare Guy Records, and I help others out. So it's fun. I like seeing others succeed and seeing, you know, good talent get heard, you know, and you know, they're like my fam. I love them. I want the best for them. So I want to ensure that I can do the best I can. So
yeah, for sure. Where did the name come from? Does it have to do with you being a drummer?
Yes, actually, it's like the most stupid backstory ever. I was in a high school band called Schreier, and we were like loading in for some gig, and you know, I played drums for that band. So my guitar player was like off the stage, and I was off stage, and I needed my snare drum. And I told him, like, "Hey, man, like, can you pass the snare?" And he's like, "Oh, like this little snare guy right here, this little snare drum guy," and I'm like, "Yeah, the snare guy." And I'm like, I don't know why we just kept, like, we just thought it was the most funny thing ever, and at the time, and then we just kept making, like, a running gag. We're like, you know, imagine, like, Snare Guy Records or something like that, like, and then, like, my other guitar player drew the logo of it, and, like, I don't know what happened, like, it just became a meme, almost, and then, like, I just over, like, a super stoner humor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, alas, we have Snare Guy Records now, and I really don't think I should be on that story.
Yeah. It's a great origin story.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. How long did it take to put that together? Because I'm sure that's kind of a big process.
Well, I mean, I've had Snare Guy Records, like, floating around since, like, high school, I'd say, but, like, I never knew what to do with it, and then it wasn't until, like, 2018 when the band started doing really good, like, Revive. I started mapping the industry and how it works, and I'm like, oh my god, like, I can definitely, like, start doing this, you know? So, in 2018, I'd say, was the true birth of it. We put out our first record as Revive the Rose. We put just the album out distribution wise through Stair Guy Records, just to kind of get it out there and start. And then my first artist I signed was Conan Doyle, and then I just we kept hustling things, and it was just doing really well. And then I signed Gravely eventually, and I don't know, it just started, like, the word got out there, and, like, you know, everything Revive was doing was slapped on a Stair Guy Records, even, like, Bar Down, the NHL song. So it suddenly naturally became relevant to some degree, and now it's just kind of like this little label that could, you know. So I don't know, it's still growing, lots of work to do and lots of learning on my end, but definitely crazy, didn't even expect that to happen so soon. So yeah
definitely. So are there only two artists right now on Snare Guy?
So on Snare Guy Records and management, I got Conan Doyle. And then under Snare Guy Management, I have Gravely James, the Jailbirds, and I do technically have Diz James right now, but Diz James is on a little hiatus at the moment. He's just kind of, he had to do some more, he needed more time on the art side of things to figure out what he wanted to put out there. So, he will be back though. And, I have an intern, actually, believe it or not. I was approached by a Durham College student named Aaron. Nice. Esposito, and he hopped on board to help out, and he brought a band with him, and he's the primary management for a band called Cigar Club. I kind of help out, you know, he brings me what they want to do, and, like, you know, Aaron's learning still, right? So I kind of, like, coach him and whatnot. And alumni wise I was very lucky to have managed my old band called Foolproof, if you heard of them.
Yes.
Who recently won the 97.7 Rock Search. I used to be the bass player of Foolproof. When they won, they needed some assistance, and I just kind of helped them out with that, and we got them charting on the radio, which is amazing. They
awesome.
Were number 25 on the Billboard mainstream rock charts.
So that's incredible.
Was huge. But I just did, like, a development, like, contract with them. Like, it was only for 6 months, just to kind of get the ball rolling for those guys, and then and then there's another band called Other Wives I used to manage, but they broke up, unfortunately. But they're really awesome. So that's really my history as it stands right now for the label.
Yeah. What do you typically look for in an artist when it comes to bringing someone onto Snare Guy?
Well, it's funny, like, I never, like, look, I guess, but, like, what catches my attention, like, immediately and gets me on board is, one, the authenticity of the project.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I never listened to rap, but, like, Conan, like, I found him on, like, an Instagram ad, and the caption was, like, I'm probably better than your favorite rapper, and it's a big thing to say, but, like, he just said some true stuff, like, within that 30 seconds, the beat was awesome, and I was like, yeah, man. And I just called him. I'm like, I don't know what I can do for you, but, like, I want to help you. Like, I think what you're doing is really cool. Or, like, you know, just super talented songwriting. Like I said, authentic songwriting, I guess. That's what I meant to say, sorry. And just a drive to do it, you know? People that really want to pursue it for all the right reasons. That really attracts me to a project. And I'm really lucky that these artists trust me to help them grow. I feel really special to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you hope for the future of the record label?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, that's okay. What do you hope for the future of Snare Guy?
So eventually I want Snare Guy Records to be all in-house. Like, I want to be a booking agency one day, I want to be a management company, and I want to have a big record catalog that can physically distribute a lot more for artists. I do plan to partner up with the label eventually to maybe also a major label to, like, tie it in and get it down some other paths that I don't have access to at the moment. But for now, we're just going to focus on building our own brand and building the authentic roster, you know, and just putting the artists first, you know, and I just want to grow community through it all. That's really it. I just want to help people out, reach their goals, like, people I believe in, and people that are great to work with and have a big heart. So I just see big things for the label in that sense. And it's cool because I get to run events as Snare Guy Records, and I get to like do it kind of whatever I want for the event. Like I can theme it. There's no Live Nation stopping me. Like there's nothing. Like it's completely my playground when it comes to it. So it's cool. I get to kind of do these little niche markets that I'm planning. I wanted to do all these like cool skateboard shows before COVID, like at the skate parks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, COVID kind of put a towel on that. But yeah. You know, I'm just trying to think outside the box a little more. Get young people, you know, and on the scene more so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Revive the Rose actually collaborated with Taft Brewhouse to create your own bar down lager.
That's right.
How did you get that opportunity?
Well, Taps has supported the band since day one. Like, we used to play shows at Taps, like, when we first started out. And then COVID happened, and I don't know, one thing led to another. We ended up snagging the EA Sports deal with NHL 21. But it's funny, because we always talked about, like, hey, like, one day we'll have a beer. Like, and it was either, like, we were always saying, like, oh, it's going to be either Moxie Blonde, like our song Moxie.
Right.
Or bar down lager, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we always just like kind of said that and like didn't really think much of it, but then the bar down deal went down and we're like, we couldn't tour because COVID, so we're like, well, boys, like, what do we have to lose? Let's drink a beer. Like, so I called Eric, the owner of Taps Brewhouse, up, and I said, hey man, like, here's the rundown. We totally just landed our first sync deal in a video game for NHL 21. The Toronto Maple Leafs are currently using our song as their warm-up song. And we want to make a beer. And I'm like, let me know what you think. And he's like, well, we're doing nothing right now. So
yeah.
He's like, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought it to the laboratory. He's got a brewmaster there, and he's a genius. And we got politely invited from Eric to come sample a few options, and the best sampling ever, by the way, better than Costco sampling. And yeah, we just tried different lagers. It's pretty much their base lager, like the Taps lager.
Mm-hmm.
And but then they put like essentially a giant tea bag in the kegs, like that make it, and they filled it with flowers and berries, and essentially like just fermented it. So, yeah, it was cool. We got to try them, and then we just said, hey, this one tastes the best. And then we rolled the thing, and within a month, it was done, and we announced the game, and then we announced the beer, and it was insanity. And then TSN wrote up on it. And it was, yeah, that's the history. Here we are.
Yeah, yeah. How was the reaction to releasing a beer? Because, you know, most musicians release merch or maybe an acoustic album or something, but you created a drink, so...
You know what? A lot of people were mind blown that we put out a beer at this stage in our career.
Yeah,
like, it's usually something you kind of venture into when you're a little bit bigger than what we are, I guess, at the moment. Because we're still very bottom totem pole, I guess, in the industry. But we said, screw it! Like, this is a perfect opportunity, and people loved it. They're like, wow, that's like the. And I think they felt like it's like the complete trifecta to Revive the Rose. Like, it's just totally part of our vibe, you know. And they loved it, and then when they tasted the beer, that's when it started doing really well. Once we got lips on the beer itself, people were like, this is really good. And now we're like on our 10th batch of it. We made like 10,000 liters of this stuff.
Yeah, geez.
During 3 lockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, it went really well. They loved it. And then we did like a beer release party. Like, just so funny. We're so used to doing like CD releases. We're like, yeah, we're doing a beer release. And it was cool. They just got to drink a bunch of our beer, and we played a set.
Cool. Sounds awesome.
It was a great time.
Yeah. One thing that I noticed is that you and the band like to cover songs across your YouTube channel, including artists like The Trues, Green Day, and Neil Young. Why create covers, and do you feel as though performing other artists' songs improve your own songwriting?
It just kind of naturally happens. Like, we love those songs so much, you know what I mean? Like, we always... Like, you know, just, you ever have like a favorite song, you just want to sing it at the top of your lungs or like crank it, like, but we have the option to play it. So we're like, well, let's just do it. So I don't know. It just kind of naturally happened. And we just thought it was cool content, too. You know, people love a good song cover. I appreciate a good song cover if it's done right. Yeah, but definitely, like, you know, playing song covers definitely helps you kind of get a feel for song structure. So, yeah, I would say it definitely crosses that map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a song or an artist that you've always wanted to cover but have been too hesitant or intimidated to?
Well, one time I did feel that way, but then we did it. We covered Monkey Ranch by Foo Fighters. We started playing it live. And that's actually, like, a really rare Foo Fighters song that people cover. Like, people listen to that one a lot, but, like, if you hear it, it's a very tough tune to pull off, but we did it. It was, went over really well. But I definitely, I would love to cover some Incubus.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be fun. Like, they're a great band. I love Incubus.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, like, you know, Pardon Me, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you guys released another single earlier this year, Need You Now. Can you tell me about the meaning behind that song?
Yeah, well, actually Pete wrote that one mainly. Then we worked on it together with John Angus again. And I kind of helped out with the vocal melody on that one once we brought it to the laboratory again. But yeah, that song's essentially just about, like, how people only need each other at certain times, like, sometimes, like, when, like, especially when people, like, you know, are drinking or whatever, and you get that 2 a.m. phone call or text, like, they need you now, but not, like, any other time, though, like, only at that time they need you, like, just, we just always find we get interesting texts or phone calls, and that's what, how that song kind of sprouted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
To keep it on the PG-13 side of things, that's the explanation I'm giving you for that.
Exactly, exactly. Who did you work with to record and produce the single?
That one was with John Angus McDonald as well. And yeah, we did that one in Heartless Place, both at Catherine North Studios. So that was, love Catherine North, what a vibe. Such a good, just open space with awesome amps and guitars and stuff. It's a good time.
Yeah, oh yeah, I love that studio. What do you hope your listeners take away from Need You Now?
I hope they can I guess relate to that song, and I don't know, I just hope it's a solid tune for their library, you know. I hope they love it, and there's not much I really specifically want them to take away from it. It's weird I never know, like, we just kind of write because we like what we just like to write about and jam, you know. But it's cool to see what, like, songs mean to other people and, like, how much they mean to people. And, like, it's cool, you get to see all the playlists that they get added on to on Spotify, and it's like, oh man, like, this guy throws a song, he's cutting the lawn or something like that. It's like, that's cool, you mm-hmm. see that the Cutting the Lawn playlist or whatever. It's like, oh man, right on.
That's awesome. So you also released an acoustic version on YouTube with John Angus McDonald of The Trees.
Yeah.
Why record an acoustic version?
Well, first of all, we just needed more content, I feel.
Sure.
And it was just, I don't know, we love jamming acoustic, and we find people really like when we do acoustic stuff, but we feel like we never highlight it enough, I feel. And we wanted to do something special, like have special guests on some certain stuff. And it just only felt right to call Sir John Angus McDonald himself up to come shred with the boys. You know, being in Hamilton, it was easy to get that done. But I don't know, we're always thinking, you know. We're always just like, how can we do this differently? Or like, how can we bring something cool to the table, you know?
Yeah.
We're always looking for ways to interact and with fans and, you know, give them stuff to enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. What are your long-term goals for Revive the Rose? Do you have certain, maybe, music career checkpoints that you'd like to hit at some point in the future?
honestly, I just want to do this for the rest of my life. I want to remove the 9-to-5 in my life eventually. And I see it, like, I feel we're getting closer and closer to that. It's just, COVID was very silly. I wish it didn't happen. But I also do wish, like, I don't wish it happened, but it was nice to have the downtime at the same time. But I just honestly want to do this for, I just hope we can grow the fan base bigger and bigger, that's all. And I'm just kind of down to see where it goes, but I just definitely wanted to eventually remove the man from my life, like the, you know, the template. I just want to rock and roll. That's it.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of downtime, what do you feel that you've gained the most from these last couple of years of kind of forced downtime?
I've definitely valued, like, I definitely had time to finally slow down for the first time in life. Like, you know, we're always like, you know, okay, you graduated high school, okay, you're working full time, okay, now you're in college, you know, it's like, holy crap, like, you really don't have time to think fully, almost. You know, you try to the bad thing and everything, and, you know, you try the love life thing out, you know, whatever, like, everything, you just doing stuff, and finally, with downtime, I really just, I was able to just think for me for once, you know, like, what I really value in life, and what needs to go in life, and what needs to be more present in my life, you know, and I just think it was nice to reevaluate my needs for life for once, like, it just because finally everything just slowed down, and it kind of was nice because it, you know, there's a lot of great talent out there, like, that's killing it, but with the forced downtime, it also meant, like, a lot of the industry was on downtime, and it allowed me to finally, like, with the help of social media, help me, you know, kind of stay and stay on top of the pack out there, you know, and really grow the band, like, really show people what we're made of, you know, and we came out of it even stronger. Like, we honestly, I think, quadrupled our fan base because of this lockdown.
Well, that's a fantastic plus.
Yeah, we got to meet some cool people cyberly and make some new friends. I made friends with the Beaches recently. I love those girls.
Really?
They're awesome.
That's super cool.
Yeah. They're very nice people.
Well, that's awesome. What can we look forward to seeing from you and the band?
More tunage. It's on the way. We got a new record coming out this fall, which I'm excited for. And we do have a lot of cool collabs coming for the people that they don't know yet. So we're excited for that. And yeah, you can definitely look forward to our biggest show to date in Toronto at the Phoenix Concert Theater in December.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, oh, and a tour. We're going to announce a tour soon. So, yeah.
All right. Looking forward to that. So everybody listening, you know, Andy, thank you so much for jumping in here and talking to me. And
hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, anytime. And yeah, I'm just going to let everyone listening know where to find you again. So everybody, you can find Andy on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Andy Kolenico and Revive the Rose on all streaming services and socials as themselves. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single by Revive the Rose. Need You Now is a single from earlier this year about begging your lover to stick around.
Hey guys, this is Andy Kolenico from Revive the Rose, and I'm going to use my radio voice for this plug. You're listening to Hawk Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
Something that I said. We're CIOI-FM, broadcasting from Hamilton at 101.5 megahertz. Just call us The Hawk.
I can hear your heartbeat. Oh, baby, it sounds so sweet. I get a funny feeling when I'm listening to you breathing. I got my feet in the sand. Listen to the sounds of a reggae band. So when I hear that groove and we all start to move, things might get a little out of hand. I keep them waiting for the sunshine. Gotta take it all in. A little sunshine. I keep on rocking till the day begins. When you're feeling like a dog and you cannot shake them blues, when the days will get too long, I got something to make you feel brand new.